The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
The rest of the English papers are all really dominated by this story of Sarah Everard. And this is a story that really has, I think, not just in England, but here as well, it really has taken off. And as a campaigner says here, it has opened a wound. And now what's going on today is that as the killer is being charged and appearing in court, but there is an issue now developing around people who want to take to the streets and protest and go to Clapham Common and have a vigil and all that. And the police are saying, we feel really bad about this, but we cannot allow this to go happen. But there's a great quote here from a woman called Nimco Ali, a government advisor and campaigner tackling violence against women. She said that this is a collective grief, and she said it's like our wounds have been reopened, but when a wound opens up, this is a good moment to use antibiotics. This is a moment to use our platforms and our privileges and make sure we bring about change. And to that end, I want to talk now to Natasha Murta, who is a reporter for RTE News and Current Affairs. And good morning, Natasha.
Good morning, Brendan.
Now, Natasha, this week you reposted an article you wrote for the Irish Times 5 years ago, I think, and it's caused quite a commotion online. So maybe if you don't mind, we'll start at the beginning of the story. It's 2014, you were backpacking around the world. You ended up in Panama. You were 7 months there, I think. And then tell me what happened on your final night when you got a water taxi.
So I got in the water taxi from the taxi rank. It was a registered licensed taxi, so that it wasn't a situation of me being silly. And the boat left the dock, and about 5 minutes into the journey, when I was in black water and quite far away from the place that I needed to get, the taxi man cut the engine off.
Okay, and listen, Natasha, I'll just interrupt you for one sec, if you don't mind. I should say that if people have kids listening or anything, just the next couple of minutes maybe, they might want to send them into another room for a sec. Sorry, Natasha, go ahead.
No problem. So the engine was cut off, and I remember I was sitting at the front of the boat, and I remember when I turned around, the taxi man was looking at me, and I remember thinking that if the engine had cut off by accident, he'd probably be looking at the engine, but he was looking at me. And so I thought, this is a little scary. And basically there was a bit of a, you know, he started moving towards the boat, towards the front of the boat, and he was asking me to pay up front, and I gave him the $10 that I had, I was wearing a strapless dress at the time, and he pulled us down, exposing my chest, I can't remember how long this went on for, probably 5 seconds. But I ended up getting out of the boat and into the water. And I just remember hearing the engine come back on, and I was pulled back into the boat. The whole thing was terrifying, and I just didn't know what to do, what was going to happen. But I said to this man, you know, I was pleading, please don't stop, all this kind of stuff. And then I said, if you do anything to hurt me, Rasta Miguel will kill you. And Rasta Miguel is a local man from Bocas del Toro, which is the area that I was living in. And he is this 6'2" kind of hero. He's got, you know, 6 kids. He's got dreadlocks down to his knees. And he was the chef in the resort that I was working in. And we kind of became friends, and he taught me how to cook Caribbean food. And I ended up taking over from him while he went away on holidays. And he was one of these people that when we went to the mainland to get vegetables and fruit and stuff, I would be walking alongside him, and I felt really, really cool. You know, everyone would say hello to Miguel. Everyone knew him. And so when I was in this boat in this terrible situation, I said, if you do anything to hurt me, Rasta Miguel will kill you. And the whole situation immediately changed. And he turned the engine back on, and he said, he said stuff like, "I was joking, I'm sorry, I was just joking, you didn't need to get in the water." And I just remember feeling the most awful pain on my back from being pulled back into the boat. And so the boat got to the dock where the Garden of Eden, the resort I was working in, was. And I jumped out of the boat and I ran straight up to the main building where my bosses, Dave and Sue, a lovely couple from the UK who ran the resort, they were asleep in bed. And I burst into their room, hysterical. And, you know, I remember Dave getting out of the room and I went to sleep in Sue's bed with her that night. And the next day, and as you said, this was my last day in Boca del Toro after 7 months being there. And nothing like this happening. It was so unfortunate that it was my last day there. And in the morning, Sue was asking me what I wanted to do about this. And I just want to go. I just want to leave. I want to leave Panama. She said, "Well, look, we've actually called Miguel and we've told him this, what happened. And he's very, very upset." And so Miguel came to the Garden of Eden. And there was absolutely no question on what was going to happen. I was getting in that boat with Miguel and we were going to the water taxi rank and I was to identify the man. And so we did this and he was there and there was no question on whether or not he was the person. And his license was stripped from him. He was never going to be a taxi driver again. And I thought, wow, this is a real result, you know. Mm-hmm. I've actually made a difference here, or Miguel has made a difference here. But Miguel quite wisely said, "Unfortunately, this is still a man's world, and he will probably have that license back again in a month." So Miguel went to the man's house, and he told the man's wife what he did. And I think that was the real...
Yeah, that was the bit of rough justice that was going to work. And listen, you wrote a blog about this and it ended up in the Irish Times 5 years ago. And so 5 years ago is a long time ago in some ways. Tell me about the reaction that you got at the time to telling your story.
So it's going back, as you said, 5 years. So I think I was 22. And it's kind of embarrassing because I don't think the article's written very well. But I wasn't a journalist back then. So I wrote this thing and I was thinking, gosh, this is really exciting. You know, I've told a very brave story and it's going to be in the Irish Times. And, you know, then I stupidly started reading these comments. And they were awful. They were saying that I was a stupid girl that was encouraging reckless behaviour. There was a lot of controversy over my shorts that I was wearing, and like if you look at the image, I am a tomboy. In the image, I'm wearing Doc Martens and these, you know, orange baggy-ish shorts and a black T-shirt. And the comments around those shorts, you know, one comment said, "My daughter wouldn't even wear that in Ireland, let alone a foreign country." You know, you're the whole point of the article.
And she said, "But then my daughter is not an exhibitionist," was her last line, wasn't it? And there was a lot of kind of cover up and, you know, all that kind of thing. And then you reposted it this week with some of those responses.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, International Women's Day was the other day, and I didn't want to post, you know, a picture of, you know, my lovely mum or my wonderful female friends saying, "These are the wonderful women around me," you know, blah, blah, blah. I didn't want to post anything because I kind of felt that the climate at the moment, there isn't really much to celebrate being a woman right now. And so I just didn't post anything or tweet anything or whatever. And then it was when the news of that poor woman, Sarah, in the UK came out. And it really sort of made my blood boil because she literally was just trying to get home. And that's what I was trying to do. I was just trying to get home. And she was murdered. And it makes me furious.
And element in the discourse of people slightly blaming her for the way she chose to get home. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I read so many comments saying, "Why didn't she get a taxi? I mean, why was she raped, you know? She didn't get a taxi because it's, you know, she was 50 minutes from home. It wasn't that late. It was warm. She wanted to walk. Yeah. Why are we asking, why didn't she get a taxi? I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
And then, Natasha, I suppose it started a whole other broader conversation now. And I think that, do you know what, like, I have to admit, I'm learning a lot in the last few days myself. But one of the things that's been spoken about a lot, for example, is that women, when they're walking alone at night, will often have their keys, with the keys sticking out in their hand, ready for if anyone attacks them. And of course, they're making the point, we shouldn't have to do this, we shouldn't have to be afraid. Mm-hmm. And we've talked before about your travels, and there were other incidents on your travels. And I know you were determined not to let it put you off travelling, but I know you say it does make you more wary as well then.
Yeah, and I was saying this to your researcher yesterday, and I want to just say it again. I don't want to scare mums and dads listening to this and make them think, God, I'm not going to let my daughter go travelling when she finishes university. That's not the message I'm putting out. You know, the world is a wonderful place, and I do believe that there's more good people out there than bad people, and it's there for exploring. But yes, we do have to be more careful, and the key in the knuckle is a great trick. But something that made me feel very safe was I got pepper spray, and it was a little keychain. And because I don't know if I'd actually be able to use a key in between my fingers, or a knife, or a gun, like that's just too. Pepper spray, really good to have, you know, very effective. Thankfully, I never had to use it. But that was one of the things that made me feel safe. And of course, telling people where you are, when you're leaving, you know, don't be all the other stuff. You mean, you know, all the go-to things. But it just seems that even when we walk on lit streets, on streets that have CCTV, and we text our boyfriend or our dad or our mom or whatever before we're leaving, like Sarah did, even when we do that, it's not enough.
Yeah. But, and I suppose, look, there are things you shouldn't have to do anyway, I know is the kind of conversation at the moment. But I suppose your bigger point is that it did not stop you from living your life the way you wanted to lead it either. Listen, an interesting little kind of coda to all this is that when you wrote the piece 5 years ago, I know you got, there was no real pickup of the piece at the time, but I believe this week that the TV and radio shows were beating your door down asking you to talk.
Yeah, I tweeted it and went to bed, and I woke up. I actually woke up to your researcher ringing me, and after I got off the phone to her, my phone was bananas, and I was like, oh God, what did I do? But yes, there was a huge reaction this time round, and I think it's very telling of the current climate. As you said, when that was published 5 years ago, no one contacted me, but now it is so much more important because women are tired, we're exhausted, we're angry, we're sick of saying, please don't rape me. No, I don't want to date you and I shouldn't have to say why. No, I can't get home because we're tired of all this stuff. And so me retweeting this now and highlighting all of the comments from people being like, you know, you silly girl, you shouldn't have done this. It's playing into the fury that I suppose women around the world right now are feeling. And it is just, I'm tired. I'm tired of this.
Yeah. I hesitate to ask you this, but because I know it can seem kind of trite in a way, but and, you know, I think women can rightfully say, look, it's not our job to tell men what they need to do now or anything. But any ideas on how to capitalise on this moment and what needs to happen now?
Well, I'm just one girl. I don't have the solution and I'm not, you know, an expert or anything. But what I do know is that it's not working us shouting out anymore, you know. Women saying, please keep me safe, please help me, please this. It's not working anymore. So I think we need to bring this narrative and bring this topic of conversation into schools and teach young people to respect other people's bodies, and this whole thing of consent and, you know, that whole thing, we need to talk about it more. We need to talk to our kids about it more. And we need to realize that women, we're scared all the time. You know, it's not just about me being in a boat in the Caribbean. It's women in the supermarket. It's women in a taxi. It's women. We are. It's this horrible fear, unfortunately, is in the thread of the tapestry of everyday life. You know, yeah. It's not just young women solo traveling around the world. It's everyday life. And I think that's what we need to teach young people. It's not down dark alleyways or this or that. It's everyday life. You need to be so careful. And teaching it at a young age, I think, is possibly the best way to do this. Yeah. And
well, look,
highlighting...
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, highlighting the wonderful work that places like Women's Aid and Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, like, they are so good at supporting women and teaching the right message. And, you know, I think saying to women, any woman listening right now that's gone through something awful, those centres are fantastic and they have a lot of good advice for you.
Okay. Natasha Murta, thank you very much for that. And it stands out starkly there what you say, which I think a lot of men are hearing properly for the first time this week, that women, a lot of them certainly, are just afraid all the time. I remember Louise O'Neill in an interview here last year said to me, you know, women are taught to be afraid. And I was saying, is that really true? And I think she thought, you don't know this. But yeah, there you go. Let's take a break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.